Is light a particle or is it a wave? Answer, it's both. How can it be both, you say? Surely it's either a particle or a wave, but apparently it's both. And I'll leave it to others to explain exactly how that is the case. I started reading up about it, a few articles, and it brought back bad memories of physics at school, so I thought I'd better stop this. It's not doing my health any good. But suffice to say, it is both and, it is not either or. And what is true of light is true of so many spiritual realities revealed in the Bible, that there are many things which appear at odds with each other, and we may feel tempted to choose one or the other. But both are true, and we need to hold on to both. So is God sovereign, or are we responsible? Is God three, or is God one? Is Jesus fully God, or is he fully man? Are Christians saints, or are Christians sinners? Does God preserve believers, or do we need to persevere? And in each case, it is both and. Got at home a book about them that was published this year called Both And. It's the title of the book, and it's about understanding apparent contradictions in Christianity. And we have one, don't we, in the passage that was just read. Jesus' sacrifice, so his death on the cross. Is it unique, a one-off, doing something that we cannot do? Or is it an example, setting a pattern for us to follow? And the answer is, it's both and. And we need to hold on to both. If you say that you believe in Jesus' death for you, but there is no evidence of his example in your life, well, that is a dry, dead belief. But if you are trying to live like Jesus, following his example, but you don't trust in his unique death for you and for your sins, you are trying to climb a ladder to heaven, and the ladder will not reach. It's not long enough. And I wonder which of those two you tend to lean most towards. Well, this passage will help us to hold tightly on to both, so that we trust in Jesus and we live like Jesus. It's both and. The passage splits into these three encounters you'll see on the outline. So there's Jesus with the 12 disciples, first of all. Then there's Jesus with the two, so with James and John. And finally, Jesus with the one, with blind Bartimaeus. And we're going to trace these two themes of unique and example. We're going to trace both these themes through each of these sections. So Jesus as unique, and then Jesus as example. So we start with Jesus as unique. The first section reveals Jesus as the unique suffering Son of Man. So if you look in verse 32, it says they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. So although they were going up to Jerusalem as a group together, Jesus is leading the way. He is walking on ahead of them. And it hints that the path that lies ahead, he will need to walk alone. That they cannot do what he is about to do. As he explains to the 12 apostles in what is the third and the most detailed of his predictions about what will happen to him. Verse 33, he says, see, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes. They'll condemn him to death, deliver him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him, spit on him, flog him, and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise. So he is the unique Son of Man. So that ruler prophesied in Daniel chapter 7. And this suffering would happen to him, not to them. He would suffer and die. He would rise. And the uniqueness of this is highlighted, isn't it, in the next encounter with James and John. So these two brothers, they come to Jesus with their cheeky request. They want the top jobs in the kingdom. Jesus says to them, verse 38, are you able? Are you able to drink the cup that I drink? will be baptized with the baptism with which I am able, with which I'm baptized. The implied answer is what? No. Jesus' suffering and death would be a unique cup and baptism. So on the cross, he would drink this cup of God's wrath for us, and on the cross, he would be plunged under the waters of God's judgment. And he would do this for his people, the sinless for the sinner, redeeming fallen man. Now, James and John couldn't do that. It's unique. Crucifixion, that wasn't unique at the time. 71 BC, the rebel slave Spartacus, he was crucified with 6,000 of his followers. But Jesus' crucifixion was unique in its significance. As he goes on to explain in verse 45, he says, "For even the Son of Man came not to be served but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." Jesus laid down his life as a ransom for many. In 2009, four Somali pirates, you may remember, seized the cargo ship, the Maersk Alabama, in the Indian Ocean. And they took the 23-man crew captive and they demanded a ransom. This was the sixth vessel in a week that had been attacked by pirates in that area who had previously been paid tens of millions of dollars in ransom money. You may have seen the film about this called Captain Phillips. A ransom is a payment that you make to set somebody free. It's a picture of our spiritual condition. That spiritually we are held captive by forces too strong for us. We're held captive by sin and by judgment. But on the cross, Jesus uniquely paid the ransom for our release. He made the payment to set us free from our captivity. He lived the life that we should have lived, and he died the death that we should have died. Now, no one else could do that. It was a unique ransom for many. So just as God had set his Old Testament people free from slavery in Egypt, so through Jesus' death, we are set free from sin and death and judgment. We are ransomed. We are redeemed. Now, if we understand this, if we get this, we will do what Bartimaeus does in verses 46 to 52. This blind beggar by the roadside, when he hears Jesus was going by, verse 47, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And again in verse 48. Although Jesus was just from some obscure Galilean village, verse 47, Jesus of Nazareth, Bartimaeus saw him for who he really is, the Son of David, the promised king in David's line, the unique Messiah. And he saw his need of Jesus, and he cried out for mercy. So he knew that Jesus alone could heal him. Ironically, blind Bartimaeus could see better than anyone. So Bartimaeus could see better than those with two eyes, including the disciples. So he saw clearly who Jesus is, and he saw clearly what Jesus could do for him. So what he lacked in eyesight, he made up for in insight. "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And he did. This is the final healing miracle in Mark's gospel. Verse 52, Jesus said to him, "Your faith has made you well." And that word could mean healed or it could mean saved. And immediately he recovered his sight. Well, do we see as much as blind Bartimaeus did? Do we see how unique Jesus is? That he is the one and only Messiah who alone can save us. Because if so, we will allow nothing to stop us coming to Jesus. I mean, Bartimaeus was desperate, wasn't he? And he was determined. So when he first cried out, verse 48, we read, "Many rebuked him, telling him to be silent, but he just cried out all the more, 'Son of David, have mercy on me.'" So opposition, people telling him to shut up, just made him more determined. Because he knew that Jesus was his only hope. This week, ultra marathon runner John Kelly He broke the record for one of Britain's toughest endurance challenges. So he did the 260-mile Pennine Way in under 60 hours. He had just two naps of 10 minutes each. I mean, people can be pretty determined, can't they, if they want something badly. But once we get who Jesus is, once we get what he has done, we will not let anything stop us from getting to him. It won't matter what other people think of us, won't matter how they react. We will get to him and we will cry out, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And he will. And we'll hold fast to him. He's not just another prophet. He's not just another teacher. He's not just another anything. He is the one and only. He is who we are not, and he has done what we cannot do. But once we see that, once we've cried out to him for mercy, once we put our trust in him as the unique Son of Man, Son of David, who gave his life as a ransom for us, then we will also follow him as our example. So his sacrifice will be to us both unique and example, both and. So let's look secondly at the example. Jesus gave his life as an example for us. Let's go back through the passage, verse 32. They were on the road going up to Jerusalem. So Jesus alone, we've seen, could do what lay ahead in Jerusalem, but the disciples were heading there with him. And verse 32 says that they were amazed and those who followed were afraid. Why were they afraid? Well, because they knew that their fate was intertwined with Jesus's, and that if their leader was going to be condemned to death, they as his followers could expect similar treatment. He may have been walking ahead of them, as we've seen, but they are on the same road with him, and it is a rocky road. When it says in verse 32 that they were going up to Jerusalem, that was literally true. So the winding road from Jericho to Jerusalem is 20 miles long, and it climbs 3,500 feet. And by road, we don't mean sort of tarmac, paved, smooth with street lighting. Think more of what's on the screen here. Rocky, dangerous path. Do you remember the parable of the Good Samaritan? That guy got mugged on this same stretch of road, this same path. This difficult walk to Jerusalem, up to Jerusalem, it pictures what it is like following Jesus. That being his disciple is hard going. It is a difficult ascent. It is a tough climb. So as we follow him on the road to the new Jerusalem, it's not a walk in the park. It's more like the Pennine Way ultra marathon. When you hear rocky road, what do you think of? Probably these things. These yummy chocolate digestive slices. But discipleship is not a piece of cake. It is a way of life. It's a tough one. It's striking, isn't it, that in the first century world, when the Christian movement began, it was known simply as the Way. It was known as the Way. So when Paul persecuted those belonging to the Way, we read in Acts 9, he himself says, "I persecuted this Way to the death." Acts 24, Governor Felix, we read that he had a rather accurate knowledge of the Way. So Christianity in those days was known as the Way of salvation and a way of life. But it was a hard way. As Jesus said in Matthew 7:14, the way is hard that leads to life. So I wonder how you're finding following Jesus at the moment. Finding it hard going? Walking this path of discipleship? Repenting of sin and pursuing godliness? Resisting the world, the flesh, the devil? Keeping an eternal perspective? Persevering in prayer? Trusting Jesus in dark times? It's not easy. It's hard going. It's tough. Well, what should we do? Well, as the kids' song says, when the road is rough and steep, what should we do? Fix. We need to do more kids' songs. Fix your eyes upon Jesus. You don't know that one? When the road is rough and steep, fix your eyes upon Jesus. He's gone before. He knows what it's like. He suffered much more than we ever will. So as Hebrews 12:1 says, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus. So he, if you like, he's the ultimate ultramarathon runner who's gone before us. So let's look to him. Let's fix our eyes on him. He's our pattern. He's our example. And secondly, he's our example not just of walking the rocky road, but also of costly service. James and John, they did not get this at all, not remotely. So verse 35, they come to Jesus saying, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. So they want him to say yes, even before they've told him what they want. So he's basically saying, you know, sign a blank check for us. We can fill it in with the figure. So they're treating Jesus like some vending machine or a genie to fulfill their every wish. And their every wish is all about selfish ambition. Verse 37, grant us to sit, one at your right hand, one at your left in your glory. You can say, well, at least they recognize Jesus as the Messiah who's going to rule the eternal kingdom of God. But beyond that, it's all about them. They think following Jesus is a ticket to power, position, prestige. They think that them being part of the inner circle of three, they think it gives them a right to this. And notice they don't mention Peter, so they leave him out of things. No wonder in verse 41, the 10 others were indignant when they heard it. They've got it so very, very badly wrong. That following Jesus is not a ticket to a life of success and prosperity and power, at least not in this life. It is a call to suffer with him. Verse 39, he says, the cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I'm baptized, you will be baptized. So although Jesus' sufferings were unique, they too would drink a cup of suffering, and they too would pass through the waters of trials, for the persecutions Jesus had mentioned in verse 30. So his suffering set a pattern for those who would follow him. They too would need to take up their cross. The other way they got it very badly wrong was they thought that following Jesus was about getting others to serve them and their needs. But that is just the way of the world, Jesus says in verse 42. At dinner the other day, we ended up having a discussion, discussing the question, who is the wealthiest person we actually know? And in the end, Lena won, it turned out, that as a teenager, she had come over to England to work as an au pair. And she worked for some family. He lived on some big mansion out on some countryside estate somewhere. They had their own helicopter. They had this large staff of servants. They had a chauffeur. They had a gardener. They had butler, chef, you know, the whole works. Now that is the dream, isn't it? That's a sign that you've made it in this world, that you're someone great because you've got lots and lots of people who are serving you and your every need. But the way of the kingdom turns everything upside down. Verse 43, Jesus says, but whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. See how Jesus is both unique and example. Unique ransom for many, but also example of serving, not being served. And he calls us to be like him, to be a servant of others, even a slave. So a slave was another rung down, was inferior even to a servant. The slave was the very least of all. And that is what Jesus became. Although he was the Son of Man, the ruler of God's eternal kingdom, came down. He came down to serve us. He stooped so low. As Philippians 2:7 puts it, he made himself nothing. Taking the form of a servant, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. greatness is seen in service. And so that service mindset should mark our lives as followers of Jesus. That our call is not to be served, but to serve. The point of our lives now is to serve Jesus and his purposes, his kingdom. The point of our lives now is to serve other people, to do good to other people, to do good to one another. Now that mentality, that service mentality, should shape everything that we do. It should shape how we operate at work, how we operate at home, and how we operate at church. That we are saved to serve. Now, is that how we view things? Is that how we view church, for example, as a place to serve other people? The cruise ship industry has been hit pretty hard, hasn't it, by the pandemic. So 350 cruise ships, which are normally crisscrossing the globe, are now sitting idle. It's big business, $150 billion industry. And I don't know if you've been on a cruise, but I guess you can see the attraction of it. You're on a cruise ship, you have this great time. You're enjoying this life of luxury while this staff and crew, they serve your every wish, your every desire. You know, what's not to like, you might say. And it may be a fun holiday, but it's not a good model for church. So church is not supposed to be a cruise ship with a few people working hard so that others can soak up the spiritual sunshine by the pool on the sun deck. The church should be like a racing yacht on which everyone who is a believer is crew, working hard, serving in their different ways, all hands on deck. If we're followers of Jesus, church is not just about being a consumer, but being a server, not a spectator, but a player, not a getter, but a giver. There are lots of serving needs on Sundays as more people return to in-person church. Just about every single team needs new volunteers now. But it's not just about Sunday, is it? It's about serving one another through the week as well. In growth groups, in encouraging one another, in friendship, in giving money, and so on. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. So faith must lead to discipleship. To receive Jesus, we must then follow Jesus on the road. And Bartimaeus is a great example of this. This Bartimaeus story, it's not just about a blind man being healed, is it? Wonderful though that is. It's about a bystander becoming a disciple and a follower of Jesus. So when we first meet Bartimaeus in verse 46, where is he? He's sitting by the roadside. By the roadside. Where is he at the end of the passage? Verse 52, immediately he recovered his sight and followed him, Jesus, on the way, on the road. Same word. So he starts off next to the road, and he ends up on the road. And that is true discipleship, isn't it? Following Jesus on the road, on the way of self-denial, service, sacrifice, suffering. And so that poor beggar, that poor blind beggar, he did what the rich man refused to do earlier in the chapter. Do you remember that? The rich man, he went away sad. He wouldn't follow Jesus on the road. The cost was too high, but the poor man did. And that is a challenge to us, isn't it? Have we joined Jesus on the way? On the road, are we following him? We can't just cry out for mercy, receive salvation, and stay by the roadside. We have to follow Jesus on the way. We have to become disciples. And so the question for each of us is, where are we? Are we by the road, or are we on the road? Are we spectating, or are we following? If we say we trust in Christ's cross, as we've seen in previous weeks, we have to take up our cross and follow. Now, do we see that? Do we see that? Because at this stage in the narrative, the 12 apostles didn't. They didn't see that. They didn't get it. They didn't get that Jesus' sacrifice was an example and a unique ransom. They just didn't see it. They were as blind spiritually as Bartimaeus had been physically. They needed their eyes opening, and so do we. Over the past wee while, we've been going through chapters 8 to 10, and chapters 8 to 10 have all been about Jesus' sacrifice as being both unique and example. And you may recall that three times Jesus had predicted his suffering and death. He taught about what it means to follow him. And each time, the disciples have shown that they just do not get it, that they are spiritually blind. And what they need is for Jesus to open their eyes. Well, very strikingly, these chapters 8 to 10, they begin and they end with a blind man being healed to illustrate precisely this, that this is what they needed and that is what we need. And so that would be a good thing to pray as we close, to say, Lord, open my eyes, or open them more to see these truths, to see Jesus as both unique and example, that I would trust in his sacrifice as my ransom, and that I would live out his sacrifice as my example, that I would be both Christ trusting and Christ following. If you had just one wish, what would it be? What would you wish for? Would it be to be taller, to be slimmer, to be richer, to be healthier? Twice in this passage that we're looking at today, twice in this passage, Jesus asks people this question. He says, what do you want me to do for you? Verse 36, verse 51. What's your wish? James and John, they want power and status. Bartimaeus, he just wants to see. May we be like him, crying out for mercy and then following Jesus on the way. Let's pause for a moment to reflect on what we've heard, and then we're going to join in prayer together.